The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Tony Payne and Cole Hammack. Hey, guys.
It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Today's a great topic. Excited to get into it. Whether you're watching television or on social media, real estate. So real estate is everywhere. Get rich quick by buying real estate, buying property, flipping houses. Seems to be a hot button for the budding investor. So today we're going to run through ways to make real estate work harder for you just beyond rental properties.
Cool. I know there's a lot there, too. I mean, when we think about rentals and property and real estate, I mean, lead in with, we know that there are many successful people who have done very well, who have almost built empires in real estate and exclusively that. And like anything, you have to do your homework. You've got to be a professional. You've got to treat it like a job. You've got to treat it seriously. There's other ways to invest, certainly, but we know real estate's a big one. And especially, like you said, all the advertising out there, all the different things and ways to own, whether it's a commercial or a video or a link, it's unlimited, it feels like. I was just scrolling at lunch and had a couple pop up.
So if you've inherited a piece of property or you've purchased one thinking that you might want to add it to your investment, part of your financial plan, what now? What are some things that people should, have on their radar?
If you have already purchased it or we inherited it, is it a suitable fit for us, right? Is it worth the headache if we plan on managing it as the property manager? Does it make sense to hire a property manager if maybe that's something that we've done solo or maybe parents did solo and we just don't have the time or the capacity or, God forbid, it's in another state kind of thing? So who's actually managing? And then, is it pulling its own weight? Are we actually getting an appropriate return for the level of risk and the headaches that are actually involved with owning real estate? And that's something that can very easily be overlooked if we're just thinking, oh, well, it pays for the mortgage or it covers the property taxes, that kind of thing. But there's so much more to it that we need to plan well in advance because, God forbid, we need to get a new roof or a hot water heater that call at 2 o'clock in the morning that the toilet's backed up or whatever it is. It's more than just being able to pay for the month to month.
And we know, too, you let in, Cole, but the idea of whether you bought it, inherited it, sometimes there's those properties that you didn't plan to buy, but they're in your plan anyway. So the evaluation, like you said, it's there. What do I do with it? You're in the car, you've got maybe a couple minutes before you're home, and you're thinking about what do I do with this property. Usually the first thing that comes to a lot of people's heads are taxes. If I sell this, what's my tax bill? So even understanding how that works, was it inherited? Did you purchase it? Did you put money into it all along the way that you could account for? So understanding basis, that's what we'll call it, your cost basis. But just knowing that, again, this can be high-level real estate, multi-millions of dollars, or the shack next door that you're renting out, you still need to know your basis. That's fundamental no matter how much we're talking about.
Does this conversation pertain to timeshares as well? Or is it just like either a piece of land or a commercial property or a building? I don't know if it does or not. That just kind of popped up in my brain.
But definitely a very different beast entirely.
Okay. Well, we'll table that for another conversation.
Yeah.
So some people want to invest in real estate, but they don't want to deal with repairs. I mean, I had a family member who owned several apartments in Easton, across from Easton when Easton was first built.
Sure.
And now they're actually not so great. But at the time, it was, a great deal, right. Quotation marks around it. Very quickly learned the maintenance, the repairs, dealing with unseemly tenants, the difficulties of getting that phone call in the middle of the night. I think he had 19 of them, and he very quickly sold them all. So, what are their options in this case?
Well, I'll say, too, one of the things you described there, and it's kind of funny to me, the IRS will consider most real estate ownership passive. And that didn't sound very passive at all. That sounded very active in the middle of the night, very active. And the rules changed about 20 years ago, where before you might have had a great income, you're working your day-to-day, you're 9-to-5, and then you have a rental property, and you might have had losses on it that could save you taxes on your other income. Well, that changed. Unless you're actively involved in the real estate, and there's a couple rules on there, there's a time test, mm-hmm. a few other things, but those losses may not be deductible anymore. And if you've just been living, breathing, existing for 20, 30 years, like most of us with a family or growing, you may not have kept up with all the tax law changes along the way. So what might have been beneficial before may not be now.
Yeah, that's a great point, because we'll hear that question come up in certain circles. Right, because that's still the conversation point. Hey, you need real estate, one, to diversify, but also to save in taxes. And it really just doesn't work that way anymore. But to your question, Tracy, about the, well, what are the other options? That goes back to the idea of, well, maybe that is a property manager, where you don't want to be the one that's getting that phone call at whatever time in the morning or dealing with those in-person stops to check in on whatever it may be. And there's usually a fee involved. I think the average rate's somewhere around 10% of the rents collected, but that's going to vary based on location or how much you have going on or what the expectations are. But probably a price well worth paying just to not have to deal with that and maybe focus on things that are objectively more important in a lot of cases.
Yeah, thinking about the goal, too, for the property, is it something that's going to fund your retirement? If it is, how are you going to get your money out of it? Maybe you're not going to do it this year or next year, but if you're thinking about this is for retirement. This is my retirement piece. Well, is there current income coming from it? Is that what you mean? Is it going up in value? It's in an area you think may go up. Are there tenants that are buying or renting to own? You know, there's a couple ways, or I'm just planning on this area to go up in value over time. And there's a few different strategies you might have, but determine your strategy. Think about what your goal is, because like you were saying, Cole, when you find out your goal and you think about it, maybe there's another way to do this, or maybe there's a way to get a property manager or do it professionally or in other ways where I don't get that call in the middle of the night.
Sounds like the psychology. I mean, from my perspective, it seems like the psychology behind making a decision like that is very fly by night. Oh, I can get rental money. I can if I buy this house and I can live in it for a couple of years, and if I hate it, I can either sell it or rent it. Oh boy, I can rent it out and make extra income. And they're not thinking about all of the great expenses. You know, somebody puts a hole in the wall, you know, or the dog that they have on site. You know,
it's very romanticized.
It is
the idea of real estate ownership.
Pot farm that they put in the attic in the garage. Not a real story from anybody who owned real estate or anything.
I've not heard that one, but no.
No, these are things, again, you're letting somebody else take that property, be in it, take control of it. There may be liability there. There may be damages done. Again, I don't mean to say that you can't do real estate or do it successfully. Many people have, but they've had to put in the time and the experience and the effort, and usually that means they don't have that 9-to-5, that real estate is their profession. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, where is it my goal that when I'm older in life and I'm retired that I'm going to manage this property, or is my goal that I'm going to have money to live and go to breakfast and go out to eat? And if that's the goal, I need to do something to turn that property into money.
I remember both of my boys were at OU. Oh, yeah?
I was this close to saying it. I'm so glad I didn't.
Yeah, I did. I said it. Tony's lost over there. He's looking at me like, what is that?
OU, oh, yeah.
OU, oh, yeah.
All right.
You know that?
I didn't until now.
Okay.
Surprise.
Anyway, when they were both there at the same time, we actually considered buying a building, you know, a dorm, dare I say.
As well-meaning parents might.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually thought this might be an investment just like everybody else. Maybe it'll save the guy's money on housing, but it was an hour and 20 minutes away. And I don't know if you've been in a college.
Yeah, things college happen, house. Don't they?
Keep going.
I'm smiling because I know you have. it's a very interesting little Petri dish of all kinds of things. So I'm glad we didn't do it. But we really, I think, you know, you get bit by the bug that, you know, I don't know what happens, but it's sort of contagious where you hear people say, oh, it'd be a great idea. You can then when they're out of school, you can continue earning income. Uh-huh. And yeah.
And nothing can go wrong.
And sure. the horrific stories of things that are done to that the places that, you know, I was very glad we didn't do it.
Oh, there are horror stories, work, and some in my own family. My dad went to OU, so he sounds like had a little different decision with his parents where, and this is true, they decided to buy a property on campus, let my dad manage it. Again, this is a college-age student, remember. And he would collect the rent from his friends. Sometimes the rent may not make it back to dad. There was sometimes some damages at the property. And then eventually he wanted to graduate, which he did, wonderful, and then get a job, which was outside of Athens. Then what happens to the property? Well, thankfully, my uncle was a year behind him, very similar to your scenario. And then what happened after that? Well, we either had to sell it, we had to maintain it and have an absentee landlord with a bunch of college kids there. Well, they decided to sell it. But along the way, I've heard all kinds of stories about the horrors that happened in that house. And you think about, I just wanted my kid to go to school. Mm-hmm. Why did I have to become a real estate investor?
Right.
You didn't. But the idea of taking advantage and perhaps owning something and not paying that room and board, for some people that's appealing, but it comes with a cost.
Talking about protecting real estate investments and maximizing returns, and as an employee here, I hear that kind of dialogue on the daily. Let's give people some examples of what that means to them in their financial plan as they're dealing with real estate on the radar.
Here's maybe a simple one I'll say, but depending upon where you're at in your world, I'm about to retire. It's the year before I'm about to retire. I'm thinking about simplifying my life. Do I sell my property this year, or do I wait until the year after I'm retired when my tax bracket is reset? Something like that. It doesn't have to be this great wizardry, but that basic of, hey, resetting your tax year, that alone is a way to maximize, in that sense, what am I going to get out of it? If I was going to do this in a year where I was a high income earner and it was going to go up to the next marginal bracket, maybe I had some depreciation to recapture, those goodies along the way that you've been able to deduct that helped you. Well, eventually, if you sell a property, you usually have to take that back, and that's usually taxed as ordinary income. So if I'm already earning well and I'm doing great and it's my last year of work, I'm probably already in a decent tax bracket. But if I purposely wait until the year after I retired, now I've maximized what I'm getting out of that just by deferring the tax year 1 year.
And then on the other piece of it, you're asking about protecting too. We've talked about this more times than I can count on the show at this point, but usually pretty simple, consider an LLC for the property. And it's definitely an important thing too for those with multiple real estate properties, because usually people think, well, just one entity, all properties. But then the issue is if something happens at one entity, that can negatively impact everything, the whole portfolio. So generally the recommendation is if you have multiple real estate properties, you really should consider a separate LLC for each property.
You just read my mind. That was my next question. Yeah.
And it's funny because then you hit a certain spot where the attorneys will do the opposite and almost say, we don't need 50 different businesses and tax returns. Let's have one. The risk is going to be the same because you've grown there. So it really depends on the attorney, the strategy, your situation. But yeah, the idea of if I can separate liabilities, spread it around, separate it from me personally and maybe my
Absolutely.
W-2 income, that's the goal.
Good one. LLCs and trusts, are trusts sort of the same mindset?
Similar.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to say the issue with the trust, oftentimes you're still retaining that personally in terms of ownership. So if something happens still at a personal level or at the LLC, there's still a lot of commingling there. So better to separate that by way of entity than trust generally.
You think about maximizing too, and at least under the current law, there's still a thing called step up in basis.
Yeah.
So we talked earlier about cost basis. So you think about, what did I pay for something? So you bought that plot of land for something in 1970, it was $50,000, now it's worth $1 million. You're going to owe some taxes on that for sure. Now, how you pay that, how you structure that, that's where it becomes negotiable. You could say, you know what, I'm going to wait till that year I don't have higher income. Maybe that helps me. Maybe I buy another property and I do a technique where I exchange it. that 1031 exchange we've talked about. So there's a couple different things you could try to do. Or if I'm in poor health and I'm towards the end of my days, maybe I keep it. I die, and that step-up in basis comes into play. What do I mean by that? If I bought it for $50,000, it's worth $1 million. Well, if I sold it now, I'm likely paying that tax on that whole gap. But if I passed away and Cole inherited it because Cole is in my estate, Cole gets it at $1 million. So he could sell it at the next day for $1 million. He got it for $1 million. There's no taxes due. So we talk about that gap of from the $50,000 to $1 million, there's no taxes on that. So if you're able to technically think about when you're going to die and schedule that day perfectly, that's a great way to do it. But the conundrum becomes, well, I'm in my 80s, I'm holding this property, I want to go to Florida. I don't want to be here and have to manage this, but I also don't want to pay this giant tax bill. That's where that 1031 exchange could also come into play. You get out of that real estate you were managing, you get to move down to Florida. Now you have professional real estate and it's managed professionally, and a lot of benefits come with that of scale. You know, it's not just you and your single family house, but no, it's usually a bigger firm with attorneys, accountants, a team, professionals, a maintenance crew, you know, all of that, where I get to be a retiree and enjoy Florida again rather than being an absentee landlord worried about the driveway.
And what's great too, just to expand on that, is at that ownership structure, that 1031 by way of maybe like a DST or something like that, a Delaware statutory trust, the idea is you can have a transfer on death on that piece, meaning if something happens to you, you still get that step up in basis aspect, but you didn't have to plan to die early, I guess.
Right? I'll take that off the calendar life. Now.
Yeah, there you go. So there are options, which is great.
It is. And again, it's one of those you'll hear about in the political foray sometimes, whatever. It's there. It's a technique you can use today. And again, depending upon how tax laws might change or could change, that's something that could go away. So the idea of, you know what, if I know this isn't something that I want in my plan, start your planning, get your numbers. It starts with that cost basis, doing some research, talking to some experts. And this is where, depending upon what your goals are, that's going to drive where you go normally.
Wow. I think you pretty much answered the last point. I mean, for some, real estate is a part of their larger financial plan, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, Tony, with the discussing your plan with your CFP, your CPA, and then your attorney as far as estate planning.
Just being honest with yourself too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people really realize that the estate planning process is so relevant here, not just, you know, the financial planning part of it. So how does family financial planning keep, you know, real estate, it's, you know, specifically in sync with a person's financial plan? And maybe you just answered that honestly, overarching.
Yeah. Again, you think about the technical piece, if I can. What did I pay for the property? What's it worth? What's the income? That's the easy part. You're the real estate professional. You pick this property for a reason. That's your role. But how does this affect me from a liability standpoint? Have I talked about insurance with the right agent? Is this covered for these different reasons? You know, that alone's one area. And another, if you're making great income from it, can I defer any of it? Could I open a 401k? Am I active in the real estate? How do I even determine if I'm active or if I'm passive? Because if I'm active, that might give me a lot better tax treatment. So how do I determine that? And even something like the estate, you know, is now the time to gift a property? Maybe it'll go up in value. I want it out of my estate. Or do I just keep this and then hopefully they get a step up in basis? These are decisions, discussions where, you know what, it's outside of the realm of just good property, bad property. But no, it plays into the rest of your world, the rest of your life. You know, you lose your job at work, you got to make the mortgage payment, the tenants moved out. Do you have the reserve to stomach all of that? This is where it ties into that comprehensive planning.
Great way to end the program. Yeah. That's it for today. We hope we answered your questions. That was a lot to process, but I think we gave people some good information. Don't forget to share with your friends, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.